Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The new documentary Step chronicles the lives of seniors who attend the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. That's a public charter school that opened its doors back in 2009. Step is more than just a hobby for these girls. It's the outlet that keeps them united and fighting for their goals. Step allows them to express themselves through movement and music. Here is the trailer for the documentary Step, which opens in the Bay Area on August 4th.
We're Baltimore City.
They come home to no lights, not having food in the refrigerator, not having a refrigerator at all. But when they come to step practice, all of those things are erased out of their mind, so they can make it through life.
You up there screaming and yelling and you just stepping.
We making music with our bodies.
My mother is annoying. And I just like, Mom, gotta chill sometimes.
I'm kind of an introvert. I'm just everything that step is not. I'm not very dramatic, but all those parts come out of me when I step.
My mission is to make sure each and every one of you graduates from college.
Are these grades your best? Why does the step team get your best and I don't?
I'm trying.
School is what got me out of Brooklyn. College is what's gonna get you out of Baltimore.
Hands up, don't shoot!
A lot of our children are lost. They have no one. I feel as though it's my obligation to help them.
I'm willing to work because this is not it for me.
It's not the first time the power's been out. I don't want to have to live like this. So I'm going to work my hardest to make it not happen in my life.
I have like two people inside of me that I struggle with every day. One is unstoppable and it can do anything. And the other is she feels lost and stuck.
If we don't come together, this girl is not gonna make it.
'Cause the whole world's waiting.
This is way bigger than stepping. It's about not making excuses, making sacrifices, having a positive attitude.
Step taught me, if you come together with a group of powerful women, the impact will be immense.
We stand here today on the precipice of the future.
Step is life.
And that was a trailer of the new documentary Step, which opens in the Bay Area on August 4th. You can find information about it at yourcallradio.org. Today we are joined by three guests. Amanda Lippitz is the director of the documentary Step, and she joins us in studio. Hi, Amanda. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
We're also joined by Paula Dofat, college counselor at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. And Paula is featured in the new documentary Step. Hi, Paula. Thank you for coming in.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And Gary McIntyre is a STEP coach at the Baltimore Leadership School, and she's also featured in the documentary. Gary, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Amanda, I want to start off with you. This is your first feature film and your directorial debut. You've been making films about first-generation students going to college and about girls' education for about 10 years. And you started filming these girls when they were in the sixth grade, when they were just 11 years old. How did you first learn about the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women?
Well, I'm a Broadway producer in my other life, and I was making these shorts on the side and always inspired by the process of a first-generation student going to college. And I got involved with a group of schools in New York. There are five public schools for girls called the Young Women's Leadership Network. And I was incredibly inspired by these schools. They had 100% graduation rate. And I was having a conversation with my mom. I was born and raised in Baltimore, my mom as well, and has been an activist in the city for a long time about what we could do to help young women in Baltimore. And when you start a conversation like that, all roads begin and end with education. And I introduced my mom to the model of the Young Women's Leadership School, and she was the force behind the founding of the school. And she recruited her daughter to make films. And so I met them when they were 11 years old in the sixth grade, many years before I knew about the STEP team.
When two of the girls in the eighth grade came to New York, I understand that they started clapping and moving their feet. And you said, "What are you doing?" And they said, "STEP."
That is what happened. I was, you know, unfamiliar with STEP and, you know, the rich history of it. But I did know musicals. And Blessin, actually, who's one of the featured young women in the movie, asked me and said, "The next time you come to school with cameras, come film the STEP team." And when I walked in, for me, it was, you know, what happens in a great musical. In a great musical, characters can't speak anymore, so they sing to express their fears and their hopes and their dreams, and that's what these young women were doing with STEP.
In their junior year, you started really filming, and you talked to parents and teachers about your plan to make the documentary to make sure that everybody agreed to it and everybody would take part in it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I met with the school, I met with the parents in the ninth grade, and we just, everybody signed on. And then in the 10th grade, I did a little more interviews, one-on-one, getting to know some of the other girls I didn't know as well. And then junior year, we did some more filming. We, you know, we definitely were filming moments during junior year, and I watched Blessin miss 53 days of school and be kicked off the STEP team. And I watched the young women of the team bring her back and pull her back in, and I watched the school strategically use STEP to pull her back in, and it just was so amazing to me.
But Paula, you're a college counselor at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women, and there were many emotional and private scenes. How did you feel when you first heard about the idea of turning, about Amanda wanting to make a documentary about STEP and you being in the film?
Well, actually, when she said it, I mean, I've known Amanda for, I think, 7 years, and I've been at the school for 5. And she said it, and honestly, I just kind of shrugged my shoulders, and I said, okay. And I said, the only thing is that I just want to continue to do my job the way I'm doing it. And she was like, nope, that's what a documentary is. We're just going to follow you. I said, because the integrity and the honesty of it is really important to me, that we can be ourselves and just actually do what we do. So I was on board. That was my only stipulation, which was not really a stipulation because that's what Amanda was doing anyway.
What was your reaction when you saw the film for the first time?
The first time I saw the film, first I was completely humbled. It was difficult to see myself at first on the screen, and it was difficult to see the emotional parts that were in the movie for me because I am a New Yorker to my heart, born and raised, and I am a pretty tough cookie. I do have an emotional side, but I'm a really, really tough person, really cut and dry. It's either A or B. There's nothing else. There's nothing in between. So to see that other side of myself brought to life, it was humbling. It was inspiring to watch the girls. Mm. I learned a lot about them that I didn't. I do know a lot of them personally and their families, but that other side, because they don't share that piece with me. Hmm. You know, we have different things that we have strengths in, different areas, and I stick pretty close to the academic piece. I stick pretty close to college pieces, and I am the reality lady, and I'm generally the one that's telling them what they're not going to do. And to watch them and to see this other side of Gary McIntyre, Coach G, and not understanding just how much she does with them socially and emotionally. So it was amazing. And then also because Amanda, and not because you're here, Amanda is amazingly talented. And I was floored because I watch quite a few documentaries. This does not feel like a documentary. Mm-hmm. It feels like a feature film. Like a reality feature film. And I don't think that's really a category, but that's what it is in my mind. So I was humbled, I felt blessed, and grateful.
And that's Paula Dauphat. She's a college counselor at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women, featured in the documentary STEP. And so is Gary McIntyre. She's a STEP coach. Before we talk about STEP, Gary, what was your reaction when Amanda shared her idea with you?
That was actually my first time coaching, so it was all new to me. Being a first time coach, and then the documentary being filmed. So actually having the cameras around was very natural. A lot of times I forgot they were there. It's actually weird now that the cameras are not there because, you know, I came into the situation knowing that they were going to film a documentary. And as Paula mentioned, the integrity of me being able to be the coach that I wanted to be, uncensored and 100% myself, she allowed me to do that. And she said, you know, that's what a documentary is. We're just going to film and film and film and film, and whatever we come up with, that's what we come up with. So I'm a lot of times, you know, I forgot the cameras were there, and the girls did too. They were very used to it. They had been, like she said, she's been doing shorts for a long time, and they knew Amanda better than I did. And they knew Amanda better than I knew them. So, you know, their relationship with her was a lot of trust and a lot of love, and I was building that with everyone here, sitting here in the team.
What was it like for you when you saw the film for the first time?
Seeing the film for the first time was extremely humbling. I realized how much the girls had an impact on me, and how much I was helped socially and emotionally, and how much help I gave them beyond STEP. So I always knew that I was not just a STEP coach, but it took me to see it a few times to realize, you know, wow, this is much bigger than STEP. And though I say that and I realize that and I know that, to be a part of them making decisions now that they've graduated and gone on with their lives beyond high school is amazing. It's humbling, and it's really great that they trust me enough to include them in their life decisions. So seeing the movie for the first time was so humbling, and it was great. And we saw it all together for the first time a team. And Paula,
talk to us about STEP. A lot of people have never heard of this. What are the origins of STEP?
So STEP's origin is in Africa. Historians reference mostly the mines in Africa, in South Africa, and how STEP was used as a form of communication. STEP was also used as a form of art, with the gumboot dance group that does stepping. It came to the Americas through the transatlantic slave trade. So with that, South America, Central America, North America, that's where STEP came. And then it was used throughout slavery, and then made popular once slavery was over through the African-American Greek sororities and fraternities, and then moved to communities and churches and schools. And now it is a art form that is very predominant in the African-American community, and now other communities as well, Latino and Latina communities and so many different urban communities. But I think that it now is the time that it goes mainstream, and everyone needs to know about it, and everyone needs to know that it's an art form that stands on its own. It's not dance, it's step. And we want to be a force behind that.
How does step end up in schools? How are those decisions made? Because it's not just this school. As you see in the film, there are step competitions, and there's step in several schools. Is it across the country?
Yes, it is.
It's actually international.
Very international, yes. Yeah. So, again, it's an art form that started in Africa and spread internationally. Blessing is one of the ones who brought it to Bliss. She went to a step competition with her first step coach and said, oh my gosh, I have to do this. We have to bring this here. And went to the principal and advocated that the team, that there be a step team at the school. And they were the premier group at the school at the time when they were first starting in 2009. It was 16 girls who came together and made that happen. I was on a step team when I was in middle school as well. And the person who was in charge had experience in step. A lot of the times it's someone that's in a black Greek fraternity or sorority that starts the team or had stepped in the past, not necessarily in a black Greek fraternity or sorority. So just advocating for it to be there and knowing the art form. And now there's YouTube, and, you know, when I was in middle school, there wasn't YouTube, and there was just mentorship, and you knew how to do it because of someone else mentoring you. So now anyone can do it, and I'm happy to teach anyone how to start their program and bring it to their school or their community or their church or whatever.
Gary McIntyre is the step coach at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women, and she's featured in the new documentary Step. Paula Dofat is a college counselor at the Baltimore Leadership School, and Amanda Lippitz is director of the new documentary. It opens throughout the Bay Area on August 4th, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. We do a lot of shows about charter schools. Can you tell us a little bit about the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women? This is a public charter school, and it opened in 2009. 120 11-year-old girls won a lottery to attend the school, and the mission, among other things, is to ensure that every student attends college. How would you describe the school, Paula?
So, one, it's a very unique environment. We are a charter school, but we resemble an independent school very much in our class sizes, in our dedication to curriculum, and not that all schools are not, but it's definitely a concerted and very deliberate actions as to how we frame academics. Our principal, Siobhan Hall, we have two principals, an upper school and a middle school principal. Siobhan Hall is in the movie, and she is a curriculum whiz. So she has actually made sure that we do implement college readiness from sixth grade through the 12th grade. So I think that makes us a little unique. Mm-hmm. I know that they say that it's done, but she actually has this amazing formula, and we're starting to see the results and changes within our test scores. The other thing, because we are modeled after such an amazing network, I was first at the Young Women's Leadership Schools in New York. I was at the Queen School, and that's actually where I met Amanda. The model also of single gender education, and there's tons of research to show that this is advantageous, especially for girls. It builds confidence. They're more assured. They are risk takers in a positive way, and we're seeing those results, and that can be seen in the movie as well. So to sum it up, we are a very magical place, and not just because we're a charter school, because I've worked at charter schools before, even the one in New York, which is an amazing place. It's not the same family feel and camaraderie that we have in Baltimore. I would say probably 400 to 500 girls have my personal cell phone number and their families. Mm-hmm. Each one of the ladies here, even the director, we are all intimately connected with the families. We're invited to graduation parties. We're invited to weddings. We're invited to baby showers. So they embrace us within their homes, and they're in our homes as well. I've come home plenty of nights, and there are girls on my sofa, and that's okay with me. So what you see in the film, it's real. You know, it means that much to us. And what you'll find is we have expanded the definition of family, and it has really nothing to do with blood relations. It's about the desire to be there. It's about the love that you want to share. It's about wanting more for someone sometimes than they want for themselves.
Amanda, the question that came up throughout the film for me was, what could we accomplish if all young people had this incredible support network and the resources to really realize their dreams in this country? This is such a model for that.
You know, I'm not an expert in, you know, education or social inequalities. You know, Paula to my right is definitely better able to speak to that. But what I will say is that I hope that this film inspires young people, inspires their parents, it inspires, you know, the first generations and their parents who, you know, and their families. But I also hope it inspires more affluent communities to look at, you know, what they can do to help their neighbor next door. And that's the thing that's so amazing about Baltimore is it is, you know, the school is a family. When you live in a neighborhood in Baltimore, neighbors are important. There is something special. Even the communities in Baltimore that have gotten a bad rap, the being a good neighbor is important there. And I hope that people step up and do that and mentor young people.
Well, and talking about Baltimore, Gary, the scene in which you took the girls to the Freddie Gray Memorial to talk about where they were when the killing happened and then how the media portrays them and Baltimore. That was really interesting because you just let the girls speak their truth. And I was wondering if you can talk a little bit about that scene and when you watched it again, what really stood out for you?
What was in my mind was my parents thought about where they were when Kennedy was murdered. Mm. When I was in school, where were you when 9/11 happened? And then for them, I don't think they were they born in that? Yeah, they were. Yeah. But they were like super little babies. And for them, you know, something that hit home, and this was something, this riot was something that was driven by youth. Mm. So to find out this tragic thing was happening with youth kids and you all were safe, where were you? Where was your frame of mind? And then once you got home and watched TV, what was your frame of mind? Because I 100% remember where I was in my frame of mind and what was going on, especially because I am from the neighborhood, live currently still to this day in the neighborhood, and how I saw everything unfold and then how the media portrayed it after it was over, when that was not the reality of what was happening in my neighborhood. There was so many people cleaning up and coming together, people coming out of state to come together and clean up and make sure that the CVS was restored. On my street alone, so much camaraderie, knocking on doors, do you need anything? People walking up the streets with carts, literally with toiletries, making sure that everyone was okay and everyone was fine, and we came together as a community to make sure that our community was protected. And unfortunately, outsiders came in and destroyed it, but we were there to build it up. And they destroyed it out of frustration with a system that's built to divide and hurt. And they were very hurt when they did these things. And the cleanup was also built for happiness and hope and, you know, this happened, but this is what happened after. And the way that it was being reported was as if everyone in the neighborhood was destitute, did not have resources,
right,
and were not using their resources. And as a college graduate, I have a bachelor's of science in history. I am a homeowner. I own a vehicle. I'm not on government assistance. And with all of those things, I'm one person in my neighborhood, but I could name 25 other people on my street alone that are in the same predicament. So the way that they made Baltimore seem like, and specifically Sandtown Winchester neighborhood, seem like that we were completely out of resources and were desperate, was so hurtful. And, you know, I just had to let the girls know that's not what the reality is.
Mm. How does this affect the students? Because the media's portrayal of what you just described doesn't just happen in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
West Oakland, it happens there
mm-hmm.
when there's a shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago, right now,
mm-hmm.
what we hear about in Chicago
is
the gang violence. And once in a while, you'll get a piece where the community members actually speak.
Mm-hmm.
But how does that affect the kids?
So I think actually Gary probably had a closer relationship on that piece.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I will say about it is that I think that the reactions that I heard from the girls were that they wanted to make sure that they were living their lives in a way that people could see just how awesome the places that they come from and who they are. And I thought that that was a source of encouragement, you know, finding something fabulous out of something that people wanted to make ugly and disparaging. But I think Gary had like the more one-on-one conversations mm-hmm. with them, like when it happened, because she took them to the memorial.
Mm-hmm. So one thing specifically, I think that it was an educational moment. Throughout the entire year, I constantly reminded them, you're Black, you're a woman, and some opportunities are just not for you because of the way that the country is set up.
Mm-hmm.
And in a time where Hillary Clinton is running for president and women are doing things that no one would have ever thought women would be doing, and then Black women doing things, Loretta Lynch being where in the position that she's in the United States government, so many women doing big things. And then even the imbalance with women directors and then Black women directors, like it's off. It's totally off. And for them, they're at a powerful women's school led by women. Women run the school. There's the CEO, principals, Ms. Dofat, Amanda's mother, like all of these people are so involved in the school as women of all races and creeds, that are powerful, and that's what they see. That's their image of women. But outside of this school, that's not the reality. Mm. That's the reality because that's what we are as a community and as women. But everyone doesn't respect that. Everyone doesn't care. Some people really think that women cannot do what men can do, or not as smart, or not as strong, or not as great. So for me personally, I think it was an educational experience because they were able to see, wow, this is so true. Also, just reflecting on other urban communities, because they're from Baltimore and they hadn't lived through a lot of the things that they haven't lived through or heard a lot of things that people were saying about Baltimore, because they were at such a great school. They probably experienced things about Detroit and Chicago, Compton, all different urban communities where they exposed just the negative.
Right.
So they had to use reasoning. It has to be something positive. This can't be just everything. Hurricane Katrina, all negative. All of these things where there's negativity and tragic, but there's no one speaking on behalf of the community. So I think that they wanted to say, you know what? There's something bigger and better out of Baltimore, and I'm going to prove that there is, and I'm going to speak on it, and I'm going to develop something bigger, and I'm going to make sure that everyone knows that we're great.
Jerry McIntyre is the STEP coach at the Baltimore Leadership School. Paula Dofat is a college counselor at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. And Amanda Lippitz is director of the new documentary STEP, which opens throughout the Bay Area on August 4th. And you can check out the trailer and read more about it at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are having a conversation about an incredible new documentary called STEP, and it documents the senior year of a girls' high school in Baltimore. It's called the Leadership School for Young Women, and they are in a STEP team against the backdrop of inner city Baltimore. They strive to get good grades, even if they have a lot of problems at home. Thanks to a strong community and a support network, they prevail. The goal of this school is to ensure that every student attends college. And I hope you can see this film. It opens throughout the Bay Area on August 4th. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Amanda Lippitz, director of the documentary STEP. Paula Dofat is a college counselor at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. And Gary McIntyre is a STEP coach at the Baltimore Leadership School. Amanda, I wanted to ask you, because you filmed the girls and their families and everyday problems, everyday successes, how did you strike a balance between what Gary was talking about, the hardships that these girls go through, and the successes? Because in a few scenes, you see girls dealing with no food in the fridge. Another girl's stepdad lost his job and their electricity went out.
So I think the way I balanced it is that I spent a lot of time doing things off camera when cameras weren't around. Because for me, if we had never made a film, these young women would have been a part of my life. And I would have been supportive of the STEP team because I always thought they were amazing. So I think the way I balanced it was just believing in them and believing in the good of humankind, and also the fact that they had Paula Dofat and Coach G in their lives doing everything for them to support them. I was able to balance it, and I just knew that it would be okay.
Paula, can you talk about your background? Because In one scene with Blessing, you talk to her about her grades and talk to her about how her mom needs to attend a parent night. Mm-hmm. And her mom tells her that she'll come. I don't want to give the whole film away, but she doesn't come, and it's a big letdown to Blessing. So how do you talk about the process involved with working with the kids and, I mean, trying to really learn about what's happening at home?
So I do have an advantage in the fact, well, I met these young ladies when they were finishing their ninth grade year, but I have an advantage because I meet girls when they come in the sixth grade. Mm-hmm. So I have opportunities at parent nights, at back to school nights, at just calling them to meet parents and to meet the students. So I'm building relationships over a number of years. Because of that, I have background information that I can use when we're about to create their success plans. Mm. You know, as you said, we do, I guarantee, I won't say the school does because it's a tall order, I guarantee that every student will be accepted to college. Wow. I don't guarantee that every student will attend college, because I want to make sure that they have options. So in meeting families and understanding the girls and growing with them and watching them change in their interests, in their directions, in their goals, we're able to help them create those success plans. If we need to go to homes, we'll do that. We will do home visits. If I need to come in at 6:30 in the morning, which I have done because a parent needs to be at work by 7:45, we will do that. If we need to stay late, we will do that. If I need, thank God for technology, I have FaceTime with families. Whatever it is that we need to do, we make that happen. And in creating those success plans, we find, and everyone does not like this term, that college is not for everyone, but not because of ability or opportunity. College is not for everyone because of the trajectory of their success plan. Mm-hmm. So case in point, I have a young lady who is probably about a 3.3 GPA. She has decent test scores. She told me, I don't want to go to college. I said, why not? She said, I want to go into construction. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. So we're going to put a plan together. Then we delved a little deeper and we found out, okay, I really want to, in addition, buy homes and flip homes. Okay. So we're looking for an apprenticeship program for her. And I think that is an amazing path. You do better when you're happy trying to do what you want to do.
Right.
You know, ultimately, some girls will decide that they're not going to college and they will come back to it, but that will be at the right time. Timing is everything. So we can put one young lady in college right now and she'll do phenomenal, exceptional. She will graduate. We can put another young lady in college now and it's not her time. Maybe if we wait a year and she has a different experience and then she wants to pursue that, then she will do that. You know, I know myself and Gary, neither one of us went straight into college and finished. We had some twists and turns and bumps and all these kind of things. But by the time we enrolled seriously, we were ready and we did well and we graduated, you know. So Gary got her bachelor's, as she, you know, mentioned. You know, I got my bachelor's in my 40s. And then I got my master's in my 40s. And I had been a serial transfer student, which I think is a phrase that I'm coining now. And I had popped from college to college because I wasn't ready. I personally never should have gone to college straight out of high school.
Right.
I was not that student. So I wasted a lot of time. I racked up student loans that I'm still paying back. I didn't understand that process. So it is my mission, because this is not a job for me. This is a divine commission. I take it seriously. It is not just what I wake up to do every morning. It's what I have to get up and do every morning. So I want to make sure that young people, not just these girls, that they don't have that same experience and are in serious debt because they didn't know.
Right.
Amanda? I want to just add to what you were saying about Blessing's mom not showing up that night. And what's really interesting is, you know, neither one of us had ever met Blessing's mom, and we had been mm-hmm. in Blessing's life, you know, a long time. So when Paula says in the scene, like, I've never met your mother, you know, in 3 years, it was the truth. And that scene where you meet Blessing's mother for the first time is the first time I met her. And what was really interesting to me, and something I really learned in the process of filming, is that we took all the girls to Sundance when we premiered at Sundance, and then the families that couldn't come to Sundance, we had a screening for them afterwards in Baltimore. And Blessin's mom saw it for the first time that night. And I went up to her before it started, and I said, I just want to apologize to you. And she said, why? I said, because I judged you before I knew you. And I didn't know what was going on in your life. And I made a judgment call. And I think what's amazing about Paula and so many of the people at the school and in so many schools is it's so important to, you know, a lot of parents can't be there after, you know, after school to pick their kid up. They can't be at step practice, you know, at 4 o'clock every day. But that doesn't mean they're not loving, wonderful parents who care about their kids. And so not only do you have to meet the kids where they are, but I think what's amazing about Paula, she meets the parents where they are and makes them feel so comfortable. And what was amazing was to watch Blessin's mom really try and come around for Blessin and support Blessin in it. And to Paula's credit, that was all her.
And again, Blessin is the founder and captain of STEP at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. It's a public charter school that opened in 2009. 120 11-year-old girls won a lottery to attend the school, and their mission is to ensure that every student attends college, every student who wants to attends college. And the documentary STEP opens throughout the Bay Area on August 4th. We're joined by Amanda Lippitz, director of STEP. Paula Dofat is a college counselor at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. And Gary McIntyre is a STEP coach at the school. I appreciate, Paula, that you said college is not for everyone. They should be able to make a choice. Sometimes what I hear nowadays, because school is so ridiculously expensive, as you talk to the parents about $40,000, $50,000 a year, is people will say, well, you're a first-generation college student. Your parents don't make much money. College probably isn't for you. That's what I was talking about as a first-generation college student. I get offended when I hear that because someone could, in a box, they would say, well, you're not a good candidate for college.
Rightly so, you should be offended, as I would be too.
Right.
What I look at that, that's another reason that we make sure that our girls are educated about what's out there. What are their opportunities? We steer them away, in a sense, from just honing in on the name brand schools. And absolutely, those are open to them as well. But we want to make sure that they're finding the right fit, not just academically, but financially. You know, what good is it to have this degree from this huge name brand school, but you weren't able to get scholarships that you needed? So you also come out with a huge bill when you could have probably gone to a smaller school, more intimate setting, probably on scholarship or with very little debt, and come out with the same degree. And then maybe that school, that name brand school, could be your master's program. So what we do is try to get them to think outside of the box, outside of keeping up with the Joneses, you know, and there's the academic Joneses, you know. So we want to make sure that our girls are making great decisions. They're making sound decisions that are best for their lives.
And I did mention on senior night, you talked to the students and the parents about the high cost of college. And I was really struck by Corey's mom. So Corey wants to go to Johns Hopkins. It's $60,000 a year. And since the sixth grade, she's been working so hard to graduate at the top of her class. She has six siblings. Her mom had her when she was 16. And her mom, at senior parent night, stood up and told you that she's afraid that she wouldn't be able to give her daughter enough support.
The transparency that you see for that parent, if you think about it, you probably would not see that at another parent night. But she felt safe enough and she felt secure enough to share that in a room full of people, because those people, every parent in that room, is part of her family as well, because we're all an extended family. And she spoke what probably a lot of parents were feeling that night. And she put it into words, and other parents, I think, felt more comfortable then to discuss additional things with me. So that was an amazing breakthrough, I think, not just for Corey's mom and not just for Corey, but for all the parents that were there that night.
Gary, there's another scene, well, many of the scenes went in the step class with Taylor. She's a senior who wants to go to Alabama A&M. And Maisha, is that right? Taylor's mom is a police officer, heavily, heavily involved in step. And there's some great scenes where she comes to the rehearsals and the practice and gets involved and dances. And can you tell us a little bit about Taylor and her mom?
As I said, it was my first year coaching, and I didn't know what to expect with the mothers, because it's a lot of stress. Their children are seniors, and the girls want to go to college. They are having midterms and so many other things, jobs, and then their step. As Amanda mentioned, just because a parent wasn't present didn't mean that they weren't as important, but Maisha was super present. Mm-hmm. And she still is, to be quite honest with you. She does not have a child on the step team, and she still comes around, still helps, still supports. Mm-hmm. And these are students who she's just meeting and being involved with, and she's building a bond with them. Because she was serious when she meant, you know, these children are lost, and I feel it's my obligation to make sure that I reach someone. And I think that because we have the same thoughts about being able to reach one, mm-hmm. and then you end up reaching a lot. I think that because we have those same thoughts and the same goals and values, that we were able to work together. She was a great support system because she didn't know them longer than I did. I was just coming in, and she was great help, great support.
But that first day, you definitely were like, what is going on?
Yes. So when I first met her, it was a lot. Mm-hmm. Just as she is in the movie, that's her all day, every day. And obviously, we've grown to love each other and appreciate each other beyond step practice, because we do so many things together now. But it was a lot to meet her. And all the rest of the mothers, they all have very big, I mean, their children are reflections of them. Very big personalities. Yeah, very big and strong personalities. Taylor, on the other hand, doesn't have a big, strong personality. Well, she has a strong personality, but she's not flamboyant.
Right.
Meeting Taylor, she was very matter of fact, very specific, she helped me to a standard. She kind of questioned me, like, so how did you get into step? What's going on? Why did you choose to come to this school? If this is your first year coaching, what's your strategy? Her and Blessing and Tyrena was another captain on the team. They were very serious about what I was going to bring to the table. And Taylor, throughout the entire season, checked in with me. Look, this is what I need. This is what I want to see you do, et cetera, et cetera. So as Paul always says, all three of the girls are relatable in different ways. Taylor is that girl next door who, you know, everyone has a friend like her who is, you know, I know what I want. I want what I want. I see what I want. And then her mother is hilarious. And, you know, some parents are embarrassing to their children. But I think that her love and support and her, not just on the step team, but her being around the school and supporting with PTA and so many other things is what Taylor appreciated, but probably never would. She was like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. But I wish that I had a mother like that around that could be that involved and made time in her crazy schedule.
As a police officer.
Mean? Exactly. Well, She's actually a correctional officer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was interesting to hear her just talk about what that is like for her, what she sees on the streets, mm-hmm. the opportunities the kids have and don't have. Mm-hmm. So that was an interesting part of the film, mm-hmm. also, to hear that perspective, especially with the backdrop of the murder of Freddie Gray and then Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. and police violence happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about how this school, the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women, compares to other schools in Baltimore in terms of resources, the help that the students get or don't get when it comes to trying to figure out if they can go to college, just to keep them on track with grades, because it just takes so much support. It takes such a dedicated network like all of you. What are the other schools like? Do you know?
Before I speak on the other schools, I would like to say, I'm sorry if I would say that this is just a screenshot of what that school, how much support the school gives. Every single teacher, counselor, support staff, the principals, everyone is beyond dedicated to the mission and the relationships with these young women and making sure that they meet everyone by need, right where they are, so that they can fix or help whatever needs to be done moving forward, changing life plans, success plans, social, emotional, economic. I personally have never been at a school that seriously rears someone wholeheartedly and then has self. I have cell phone numbers of girls that's not even on the STEP team because I do work at the school. And I'm in student support and I'm the logistics coordinator. I have talked to mothers to reassure them, this is going to be okay, this is going to be fine. So that's just a snapshot of what we see every day. There are so many people who go above and beyond on a daily basis consistently without recognition. And it's just amazing for me to see that, and it's admirable.
I also think it's amazing how the community of Baltimore has come together for this school and supported the school. The Ravens, T. Rowe Price, Under Armour. I mean, people have come out to support the school. The community has, because they've seen the results. Mm-hmm. They've seen the graduating classes. They've seen these girls come out and change as they go through. So I think what Baltimore has done to support the school is really a beautiful story as well.
Mm-hmm. So to speak to the schools in Baltimore, what I will say is I am in communication with other counselors at other public schools in our district. And I will say that I believe that all the schools in Baltimore City are trying their very best to do the best they can for each one of the students. So I think that's hands down. What we have as an advantage is we do have in some ways more resources than they do. Mm-hmm. We have a foundation that, you know, helps to raise money for us. And so we're able to do some things within, especially within my department, that some of the schools just don't have the resources to do. However, their heart and their desire to do it, because Baltimore itself is an amazing place, is definitely there. You know, but you can only do so much with limited resources. And I think that is not just for Baltimore City, but it's across the country in a lot of urban neighborhoods, a lot of rural neighborhoods.
Oh, right.
You know, so it's not just about being urban. The rural areas are experiencing a lot of the same things we are with limited resources and opportunity. So, yeah, I will say that they are trying to do a tremendous job, and, you know, all the support that Baltimore itself can get, you know, with the fabulous job we're doing already is definitely
Even here in San Francisco, of an incredibly wealthy city where teachers are going on GoFundMe to raise money for carpets in their school, to raise money to take kids on field trips, to raise money for basic school supplies. It really does come down to resources.
Yeah. It is. And I think that is the great divide. You know, the first great divide for us is financial, you know, because if you don't have enough finances, one, the teachers that really could make a difference, sometimes they just can't afford to be in certain schools. That's number one.
Right.
Number two, then also some of the classes that could be offered, we don't have the opportunity to do that. Even at our school, we don't offer AP classes. We don't offer AP classes, which people don't know is not because we don't want to or there's no way for us to do that. But an AP teacher, once they're trained, they take that with them. So we can't just say, oh, we're going to continue that AP class. Another teacher has to be trained. And it costs a lot of money to have teachers trained in AP. So a lot of it has to do with the financial divide.
Are you all in touch with the girls who've graduated and are going to college? Because I checked their Facebook pages, and I was just wanting to see how they were doing, especially, well, all of them really, but Corey, who went to Johns Hopkins, I was just thinking, what has this experience been like for her? Are you in touch with them still?
We're in touch with them every second of every day.
Yeah, they're with us.
San Francisco.
Oh, right, because they're traveling with you. That's right.
Yeah.
So what stands out for you about some of the experiences they've had?
Right. But I'll answer that as well. In addition to that, we have an alumni support coordinator that follows our girls through college or through their success plans. Mm-hmm. So she stays in touch with them. She visits every girl on campus this past year once a year. This coming year, we have decided that she needs to visit them twice a year, once in the fall, once in the spring. We don't have to decide between the two. She follows their grades. She checks financial aid. She did a donation drive and got enough toiletries that every girl will not have to worry about toiletries for an entire semester. She raised, she wrote a grant to get Chromebooks. So we are, our model also encompasses not just seeing them to college, but through college or through their success plans.
What stands out for you, Gary?
I would say the fact that they are now graduating, and I met them as 17-year-old girls, and they're of adult age, and the fact that they're incorporating me in their life decisions, and they, you know, have made me a permanent mentor in their life, not just through STEP. I'm in touch with them because we are promoting the movie as a team. We've been to Sundance and performed at New York City Signing Day, at the Essence Festival, at Bentonville Film Festival. So those interactions after they've graduated high school and now professional steppers, so to speak, has been breathtaking and amazing. And just being a part of their village after they've moved into the next transition into their life has been humbling and amazing.
And I bet it's been incredible to watch the film with younger girls at the school.
Of course.
Yes. Right?
Yes, yes, yes.
It'll be so interesting to see how it would affect their decisions or their goals.
Well, the best thing for me was watching the film of the current STEP team.
Right.
So we got 20 new members once the first class graduated. And a team of 27, seven veterans and 20 totally new to stepping. Some of them had dance or other arts experiences, but most of them had not stepped before. And to see them make the correlation between education and arts and then want to exceed in both, not just one. Mm-hmm. And it was just amazing.
Gary McIntyre is the STEP coach at the Baltimore Leadership School for Young Women. Paula Dofat is college counselor at the Baltimore Leadership School. And Amanda Lippitz is director of the new documentary STEP, which chronicles the lives of seniors who attend the Baltimore Leadership School. It's a public charter school that opened in 2009, and the mission is to ensure that every student attends college. And I hope you can see this documentary. It opens throughout the Bay Area on August 4th. You can find the trailer and more information at yourcallradio.org. Gary, Paula, and Amanda, thank you all for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.
Call, we'll have a conversation about the investigations into abuse of the organic labeling system in everyday products, including milk, eggs, and soybeans. How do you know your organic food is really organic, and what does certified organic mean? Tweet your questions to @YourCallRadio and join us live on the next Your Call at 10 a.m. with Renee Kemp and you.